How many times while you have been manscaping have you nicked or nearly trimmed off your wiener schnitzel in the twins? Hey, I'm Christy, and with 30 years experience teaching men how to thin out their forest in their yonder region, I am so excited to tell you about this revolutionary lawn mower 3.0. The ceramic blades prevent the manscaping accidents that leave you unable to use your most favorite appendage. Oh, and gentlemen, it also keeps a 90-minute charge for those of you that haven't trimmed in quite a while. You'll need every second of that 90 minutes. Let's be real, though. No one, especially your significant other, wants to have to weed through your overgrown forest to find their favorite play toy. So order now at manscaped.com and enter the promo code podcast20 and receive 20% off plus free shipping. Serious, bushy man. Order now.
Welcome to the Sports Talk Garage Podcast, where we discuss and debate the latest news and hot takes from the court and the ball fields to the locker room and front office. We are four lifelong friends who grew up with a love of professional and collegiate sports. Today we are bankers, investors, professors, and entrepreneurs, but our love of sports has never changed. Come listen for the fun, gain some insight, and probably a few laughs as we give you our perspective on those oversized contracts, game-winning scores, and franchise players. This is the Sports Talk Garage.
Welcome into season 2, episode 33 of the Sports Talk Garage Podcast. This is David, joined by John and Matt. Happy to be back with you for another week and some more sports fun coming your way. We have a special guest with us this week, a gentleman from NASCAR, previous Tar Heel grad, which we really love. He previously wrote for the Sports Business Journal, was the managing director of digital and social media for NASCAR, and currently the managing director of gaming for NASCAR, Scott Warfield. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, certainly happy to have you. If you could, just for a moment, kind of give us and your listeners an idea of what your role consists of in NASCAR as the manager and director of gaming.
Yeah, so it's kind of a broad role that oversees a lot of our growth initiatives at the sanctioning body, in particular, esports and sports betting. And as of, I guess, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, now the convergence of those two.
Certainly. Yeah. It's definitely been interesting seeing how gone from in-person to e-racing and esports have just really taken off. So let's go ahead, throw the green flag and just kind of going with NASCAR and what's going on with that, John.
Yeah. So as our listeners know, I'm a massive iRacing guy. I've got a poor man's rig at home, but it is a rig, and I certainly love it, and I've loved it for years. And so right now I'm finding the positives in all this quarantine mess in that I get to see some pretty cool iRacing, both in NASCAR, Indy, F1, all kinds of fun stuff on TV right now, which I never thought I'd see. So with NASCAR kind of on this hiatus with, you know, every sport out there, iRacing has obviously exploded. Now we've got weekly television broadcasts with Fox, which is still blowing my mind, with eNASCAR, iRacing Pro Invitationals. How excited are you in the midst of everything going on in the world of NASCAR that you guys can basically keep going and have these Pro Invitationals and, you know, with iRacing being so close to the real thing or as close as we could get it in the virtual world and that partnership there, you know, what does that mean for NASCAR to be able to continue to kind of plow forward and to likely expand their audience even greater and get in some even more of a younger generation because of the iRacing connection there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think first and foremost, though, it's hard to use the word excited because I think in an ideal world, right, we'd all go back to normal life and we wouldn't be social distancing and we wouldn't have people across the globe sick and even worse from this kind of global pandemic. But your point and your question is the right one, and that's that this hiatus has, you know, right or wrong, given a sport like NASCAR an opportunity. And again, that sounds callous because it's you know, you don't want to call it that, but we're in this situation, and what I have found some solace in is, you know, our heart was in the right place. And when we had to make the announcement on Monday, I believe it was March 16th, probably the hardest announcement had to make since probably the death of Dale Earnhardt in 2001, which was that we were, you know, suspending or postponing at least the next 8 races. To be able to come back less than 24 hours later with a press release and a logo announcing a pro invitational series that was going to run in place of the Cup Series on Sundays with all of our biggest stars is pretty unique. And then to have Fox come on and carry those on FS1 and now on Fox Broadcast Network, to have IMG pick it up and distribute it to 146 countries around the world, to have it offered in Nevada and West Virginia sports books as a betting option. It's kind of surreal. And to your point, you know, the iRacing product is just so real that it not only is attractive to the core fan that's used to seeing the Cup races, you know, a casual fan that comes in is just blown away that actually isn't real NASCAR racing. And one of the stats that has jumped out to me the most in these first few weeks is that of the 900,000 people that watched us on FS1 in week one, 255,000 of those had not watched any other NASCAR prior to that point this year. And so when you start talking about why did we get in this space in the first place, what is the goal of our esports strategy? It's to get younger and more diverse. So when you start to see numbers like that, you feel really good about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are incredible. And yeah, and obviously, like you said, the situation of how this is getting started is not ideal. But I have to say, and kudos to you and everyone at NASCAR, I can't tell you how much it means to me, and I'm sure I speak for a lot of people, to be able to turn on the TV and not see something, you know, negative, to be able to watch and have something entertain us and to keep our minds off of everything going on for a couple hours. That alone is worth, you know, gold right now, just to be able to relax and enjoy something again. So kudos to your team and everyone there at NASCAR. You know, it means a lot to even, you know, like you said, the casual fan and definitely those that have been around the sport for a long, long time, just to kind of give us that distraction that we do so desperately need right now.
Yeah, that was it's appreciate you saying that. That was the reason we did it, right? The thought was, you know, could you give NASCAR fans, sports fans in general, 90 minutes at least once a week to get out of their own Twitter timelines and turn off CNN and have a moment to enjoy, you know, the unpredictable, dramatic components that is what makes sports special. And you know, we knew from our iRacing Coca-Cola series, which is runs every other Tuesday night with the 40 best gamers in the world. And that aired last year. The finale aired on NBCSN. We knew that the product would hold up. We knew the excitement would be there. We knew it would pull through on TV. We didn't know. I'd be lying to you if I said I thought we would do 1.3 million viewers in the second week and trend nationally on Twitter. But you know, there is a void. And the fact that this has been able to fill a little bit of that for people, at least 90 minutes a week, means the world to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is nice to have a little sense of normalcy with everything going on right now and just kind of looking forward a little bit. There was a rumor a while ago that NASCAR was hoping to maybe get back to racing as soon as Memorial Day weekend, a little around there, Coke 600. Obviously, nobody really knows with so much uncertainty going on, and that timeline is very fluid. There's also been a rumor floating around about multiple midday or midweek races, kind of on Wednesdays, Tuesdays, in hopes that the majority of races could be run. How likely do you think that is that we might see any type of midweek racing this year?
Well, I think, look, the easiest answer is those decisions are above my pay grade and much smarter people that get to worry about that stuff. What I would say is, you know, I think all sports, NASCAR included, are probably every single day going through different scenario planning of, okay, if we were able to resume on X date, it would mean this. On Y date, it would mean that. And that continues to change and slide. And, you know, it's making that process incredibly difficult. You then add in what a lot of people are talking about or rumoring about, you know, are we in a better place come midsummer, early fall? And then you think about even the announcement the golf world made earlier today, right, with the Masters moving in November and I think PGA Championship in the fall and Ryder Cup. You are going to have, and knock on wood, this will be a great problem to have because that means, again, that we've all gotten past this time, but you would have a fall for the ages and probably every network within the CBS, NBC, Fox, Disney kind of portfolios airing sports, right? You'd have races on CNBC, you'd have golf matches on MSNBC because there's just not going to be enough places to put this quality top content. But yeah, I think we would explore and are exploring any and all kind of programming solutions that would allow us to get as much of, if not the entire season in, depending again on a ton of variables that are out of our control.
Cool. So just out of curiosity at this point, I mean, kind of going back to the scheduling question, is this kind of a way for this year, since teams don't really have a built schedule necessarily as they would have at this point, is this a way for NASCAR to kind of run, you know, call it a free spin on some new things without a lot of repercussions? In order to help evolve the sport, I mean, you have a chance to run with iRacing, doubleheaders with Indy, midweek races, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, I'll just speak to the iRacing piece. I mean, you know, we're able to take our core product and replicate it about as closely as I think any sport can do. And we can do it on a nationally televised network with the same announcing, you know, broadcast crew that calls a normal race. And, you know, the differentiator is that this product is something that our top athletes are already using. They're already brand ambassadors for. It's organic. Some use it as a fun engagement. Some use it as a development tool. Some use it as a training ground. And you can't replicate that, right? I mean, it's the difference between, you know, LeBron doesn't go home and play NBA 2K to get ready for the Clippers, right? But the analogy is that, you know, there are guys that like to get on in advance of the Darlington race and run the Darlington track on iRacing to, you know, get reacquainted with the lady in black. You just can't replicate that. And that's something that, you know, again, we're probably benefiting from, because it's bearing out in the numbers.
So Scott, you mentioned earlier, we talked very briefly about Nevada and West Virginia kind of hopping on the betting platforms when it comes to eNASCAR with the iRacing partnership. How much work goes into making something like that happen? I mean, I know, you know, Nevada especially is, you know, so much of their economy is ran off that, you know, that gambling platform. Is that something that was in the works previously with the Coca-Cola iRacing series, or did this kind of, you know, all parties just kind of hop on board at the same time and say, hey, this is good for you, it's good for me, let's make this happen kind of deal?
Yeah, it was definitely not in the works. You know, it's another example, right? I mean, that's what's been so eye-opening, crazy about this pandemic. It's just the fact that it has impacted literally every person on the planet, which is still hard to wrap your brain around. But you know, the truth is, right, I think, you know, you mentioned it, You know, the books in Nevada, in Pennsylvania, in West Virginia, in Nevada, Indiana, they're all struggling, right? I mean, they don't have, I think, the two top sports bet on last 3 weeks has been Belarus soccer and table tennis. So they're, like everyone else, thirsting for sports content. And I think after they saw the first race on Sunday, and then probably even more importantly, when they saw 940,000 people watched it live on FS1, my guess is alarm bells started to go off there. And you sort of had the books going through the process with the regulators to get this approved. I mean, a lot of esports aren't currently approved for betting. A lot of the books will put certain limits on the bet types. I think, again, because it was the athletes, participating, and you had the kind of structure behind the Pro Invitational Series, it's a small thing that's helping, a lot of the casinos and gaming companies at a time of need. And for a sport like NASCAR, it's never about it's not about the revenue. It's about the engagement. And if this helps people return to a sense of normalcy to, put a $5 or $10 prop bet on William Byron to win an esports race, all that means is a more engaged audience that's sticking around longer, watching more NASCAR. So it's a little bit of a win-win.
Can we start getting some prop bets on Clint Bowyer and his commentary mid-race? Because I've been pretty entertained by that. I think he said he got bubbed yesterday.
If anyone's a winner out of this whole thing, it may be Clint and his his blossoming TV career, because that guy, I've always said from day one, if there was one driver that would make an incredible champion, it was Clint Bowyer, mostly because of the media tour we take them on afterwards. He would be a hit on the talk shows.
Yes, he would.
Absolutely.
With betting and that engagement of fans, let's kind of look 5 years in the future, and things are back to normal from what's going on right now. What does the future of betting for fantasy sports look like in NASCAR as more states have legalized gambling at that point?
That's a great question, and I don't know I don't know the answer to it. I think esports is real. I don't need to tell you guys that. Probably need to still tell our parents that. But it's here, it's growing in places faster than traditional sports. The amount of engagement and views across the big franchises is stunning, right? So I think over time, I do believe there is a pretty strong future for sports betting around esports. You know, things are going to have to develop from an integrity standpoint, and making sure that everyone, a lot of the publishers, sports leagues, others feel comfortable about what that means and how it manifests itself. There's no doubt that's coming, and depending on how long this hiatus goes, that's probably, well, it definitely is accelerating a lot of those conversations, because there's only so much ping pong and Belarus soccer that Americans are probably going to get excited about.
No doubt. And I'm just curious, as a side note, my father-in-law is a big NASCAR guy too, and he used to tell me that they did, when he was driving dirt cars back in the day, he played NASCAR 98 to kind of get himself and he'd have better races after doing it. But one of the questions he asked me was, how advanced are the rigs that the drivers are generally on?
I can't stop laughing about the practicing with NASCAR 98. That was a great game.
He's getting back into it now, so I'm kind of excited.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, look, the rigs can be anything from, several hundred, couple thousand to, you know, if you saw Denny Hamlin's rig in some of the broadcasts over the last 3 weeks with the three monitors, the steering wheel, the real pedals. I mean, Lord knows all he was missing was a fire suit and a helmet. And it would have been, would have been the real deal. So look, I mean, it does take a, you know, a bit of an investment, a front investment. But it's, again, I don't sound like a broken record. It's just unparalleled, right? I mean, you can put a 10-foot basketball goal in your driveway and not, you know, I'm not going to dunk like a basketball player. You run these races, in one of these rigs. It's not the same. It's never going to replace that, but it is damn near close. It's a differentiator for the sport for sure.
Yeah, I heard Kyle Busch say, I think last week, that he would have to be on iRacing for 2 years to really feel like he was up to the same speed that the guys. That's all they really do.
Oh, I mean, look, if you watch the difference between the Tuesday night Coca-Cola series with our 40 professional gamers, who are all competing, oh, by the way, for a $310,000 prize pool. Coke is on as the entitlement. The last six races of that series are going to be on NBCSN in October. But if you watch the difference in the racing between those guys and gals versus the Cup guys trying to do iRacing, it's at times stark. But that's also because practice, right? I mean, the kid that won the race in Miami, Ryan Luza, 2 weeks back, 3 weeks back, whatever that is now, my days are blurring. He won on a Tuesday night at Virtual Homes of Miami Speedway, but he logged 1,000 practice laps at that track that just in that day of, working on the tire wear fall off and getting his car set up and, you know, getting every tenth of a second out of that car, in a virtual setting. So you juxtapose that against Clint, who, you know, may run a few laps and practice a couple times during the week leading up to Sunday. It's just different.
Yeah, it's amazing how technology can really help us improve from just sitting in your living room or wherever your setup is to actual real world scenarios here. And yeah, it's really amazing there. But we're going to take a brief break and be back with Scott in just a moment. Welcome back to season 2, episode 33, the Sports Talk Garage podcast. We are on with NASCAR Scott Warfield talking about iRacing, betting, just kind of what's going on in the world of NASCAR right now, among what's going on in the world and just the happiness, a little bit of normalcy it brings. But let's kind of get back to a few more questions with Scott, just kind of talking about bringing in that younger generation, Matt.
Yeah. So Scott, one of the big questions we kind of were talking about as we were really excited to get to speak with you was Barstool Sports. They seem to be kind of a really important media partnership with NASCAR that's been made recently. First we thought maybe the average fan would be a little bit weary about it. But with having such an over-the-top media branding, kind of promoting the sport, but at the same time, we see how important it is in bringing in newer and younger audiences. And we've talked about that in the past. And NASCAR seems to struggle with that in the last few years of kind of bringing that over. What does that look like to you? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, I mean, that 18 to 34 demo is something that most every sports league is chasing, right? I mean, I don't think it's a NASCAR only problem. Our friends at the PGA Tour, Major League Baseball, just to name a few, And even the others are all looking at ways to adapt their product, their marketing of their product to be more relevant to a younger and more diverse audience. So with that comes a ton of different efforts. I look at some of the things I did back in my social media days with, you know, partnerships with Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and, you know, getting on TikTok, and then over to, you know, the Barstool relationship, which is in its second year. And, you know, it allows us, right, to talk to a pretty rabid fan base. And again, in a pretty authentic way, because, you know, Dave doesn't do anything Dave doesn't want to do. But when he comes to a race and he can experience the tailgating and the music and the partying and the loud noises and cars, you know, he bought in early. You couple that now with, you know, we announced earlier this year our first ever gaming partnership with Penn National Gaming, who, oh, by the way, had just closed on a purchase of Barstool. And now we have this incredible three-legged partnership where, you know, we have a gaming partner that's super innovative and a media partner that's now getting behind it and promoting it. You can see, or you could start to see 4 weeks into the season before the global pandemic, the pieces of what is going to be a very interesting three-way partnership in the years to come.
Scott, with that, how do you balance bringing in that newer, younger fan to keep them for years without alienating that older fan base who's gone through a lot over the past 10 years or 20, 30 years who have been those lifelong fans?
Yeah, it's certainly not something that's super easy. What I would say is, in today's kind of omni-channel marketing, it's a little bit easier than it used to be, right? Where mm-hmm. you can tailor your message, your narrative, based on the platform, right? So what we end up doing on our Facebook page, which audience skews a little bit older, as you guys probably imagine, is going to be quite different than what we do on our TikTok channel. You know, what we allow Barstool to push out and promote is going to be very different than if you turn into Race Hub on FS1 on a Tuesday night, where they're talking about track bar adjustments and, you know, which crew chief made the wrong call. That's just not content that's going to be, you know, suited for a, you know, a Barstool audience. So, you know, I think there's, it's certainly a challenge. You certainly have to have a vision, and you have to have a, you know, pretty well executed, you know, a group of stakeholders that are all, you know, bought into what you're trying to do. But, with that said, I do think, with the various options, marketing platforms that are available today, you can get creative and you can be smart about who do you talk to, about what.
Very cool.
Well, yeah, definitely keeping those separate, but also integrated.
Yeah.
Definitely helpful.
It's always interesting to get to hear some of that stuff and how that works on such a big level. But I guess last question for you is, we're kind of getting toward the end of our time here. So NASCAR just recently announced that the next gen car, which I believe is Gen 7 at this point, instead of coming out in 2021, is going to be delayed to 2022. So does that give the teams kind of the extra time that they need at this point to, I guess, get it right, put it together, because they have extra time for testing, altering, or does it give them a little too much time to where they start second guessing decisions? I mean, it's a very precision sport. So what are your thoughts?
I frankly don't know. you know, I think the position we were probably in from the competition side was just a matter of, you know, all of what you can probably imagine goes into the building of a new race car, and the different vendors and who has access to their facilities, how many people can be working on something at the same time. And I think at the end of the day, it probably was one of those where it, you know, it came down to, you know, what's feasible. When you roll this out, you certainly, anytime you make a change of that magnitude, I think, you know, you've got one shot at a first impression, and you want to get things like that right. So I'm way out of my swim lane as we start talking about this stuff, but, my guess is, knowing that we have, you know, we have the best competition group in the world, my guess is that was probably what was guiding their decision on that one.
Yeah, I think NASCAR is, you know, they're not alone in that either. You see, you know, other behemoths like Formula One that have decided to push back their, you know, next gen car as well. I think it's certainly, there was several different series. WEC had some big changes in the loop as well. And it just seems like everyone has kind of been, you know, obviously throwing a wrench with everything going on. So yeah, NASCAR certainly not alone in trying to, you know, not make too many drastic changes in light of kind of not knowing what tomorrow holds for all of us.
That's right.
Well, Scott, it's been great speaking with you tonight. We loved hearing about what's going on in NASCAR, especially in kind of this altered state of everything going on and how there's still success and growth and getting in that new customer. And also just kind of the joy it brings people and taking, you know, 90 minutes out of your week just to kind of relax, don't think about what's going on. So appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts tonight.
Absolutely. Appreciate you. Appreciate you guys having me. Hope you, you and your listeners stay safe and stay well. And, hopefully you get to, check one of these, Pro Invitational Series races out in the coming Sundays.
Yeah, we definitely will be. Thank you, Scott.
Talk soon, guys.
Thanks, Scott. Take care.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Scott, for coming on with us tonight. It was definitely a pleasure having you. So we are going to go ahead, drop the white flag for our rapid-fire questions from our producer tonight. First one coming in for the week. Very relevant for who we just had on. So for each of you, we'll start with John for this one. This past weekend's NASCAR E-Race, Bubba Wallace rage quit early after getting a wreck with Clint Bowyer and then lost his real-life sponsor, Blue Emu. They fired him over Twitter, saying that they're interested in drivers, not quitters. Whose side are you on, John? Should E-Racing be, you know, at the stage, be taken so seriously enough to warrant a driver losing his actual sponsor?
I'm 100% on the side of Bubba Wallace on this one. If this happened in real life and a guy just parked his car and said, screw it, and got out and, you know, was just pissed off, then yeah, I could see a sponsor having something to say. But I mean, come on, Blue Emu. Like, as we were talking about with Sky here, so much of this is about, you know, just kind of having fun, taking our minds off things, giving us a positive, giving this nation a positive distraction, which they so desperately need. This is not the time to be taken seriously and to start talking corporation and sponsorship and all this crap. I mean, the fact that he even did it was a blessing. It's free advertisement for you guys. And yeah, he gets mad and quits. So he's like every single other person in the entire world who's a poop plays video games. So I think it's a bad move on them. I know they're going to pick up another guy and whatever, but I think it's a bad deal on their part. And I don't like it one bit.
All right, man.
I'm going to have to agree with John on this. So I think my perspective is it was just a way for them to show that they're a quitter and maybe they wanted out due to the financials going on around right now. And I think he's a bit of a hothead. So, you know, you're going to expect that kind of behavior. But at the same time, you know, he gets to the end of that video when they're showing him in his, you know, rig and say, you know, this is it. This is why this sucks. And it's because, you know, he had a light spin on Clint and then Clint put him in the wall and can keep driving. He's like, I'm done. You know, I get that. We've all played video games. That's a very, very sensitive simulator. And it'd be very easy to get frustrated driving because you know, if you wreck somebody's like actual car, which I think is where he was getting to, if you wreck somebody's actual car in a race, they're getting out of their car and they're going to come talk to you on pit road. And that's where we see the fights happen. You know, in a video game, if it's me, I'd be frustrated, but I'd probably laugh it off because I go right back after him. Like, I think we even did that in a mall at one point, right? Like,
I think we got kicked out of the.
Yeah, because we kept wrecking each other because we would drive each other nuts, or we'd wait till the next person got caught up. And, you know, it was eight of us going at it at once. We had a great time with it. But now that it's super simple to have that in your, you know, your room. So going back to this, I think Blue Emil was looking for a way to get out. You know, if I was a driver of those latitudes, I would, you know, unless I was desperate for a sponsor to keep my drive, I would literally be looking for a different sponsor because they're just going to rage quit on you over Twitter nonetheless.
Yep,
David. Yeah, so I'm with both of you on this one. So I think I've seen athletes lose sponsorships for all sorts of crazy deals. But again, this is a simulator. No actual property was hurt. No damage was actually done. And I can't tell you, I think everybody's been racing on a video game. Something happens, you reset the game, you reset the race, you start over again because you're not happy with it. But to fire him, essentially fire him, losing a sponsor over Twitter or social media, yeah, I think that's just trying to take the blame off of Blue Emu, put it on him by doing it over social media. So I'm with both of you on that one. So let's move on to question number two for the night. Monday night would have been the college basketball championship game. Since we're not having the Final Four, that's really sad right now. ESPN did a bracket of the best college basketball player of all time, and Michael Jordan actually won. So do you agree? Or if you don't agree, who is the best college player of all time? Matt.
Of course you come to me first. So you have a Tar Heel on board tonight, and the rest of you guys are Tar Heels, so let's make this impossible. It's Michael Jordan, and it was down between, what, Michael Jordan and Larry Bird? And it was two very different styles of play. You know, Jordan really brought in the style that we're still seeing today with a lot of high flying dunking. But you know, if you're actually asking me about, do I think you can fight that argument? No, I don't think you could actually have an argument as to who'd be a better college player. At the same time, my brain goes somewhere between Shaquille O'Neal, because nobody could block him at the rack. Now, was he an all-around player? No, he's not going to dribble the ball. He wasn't great at free throws, but you're not going to stop someone or like Julius Erving back before you could, you know, throw the ball on the ground or off the backboard, run up and dunk it. Okay. It was just different styles of play. So I'm going to give that to him, but I'm also going to throw out Pete Maravich, who brought in, you know, the Globetrotter style of play of like running down the court and throwing it around your back. And that's very much today. So I think that there are some other ones out there. I think Jordan's just the most iconic that kind of brought all that together.
All right, John.
Yeah, I agree with you, Matt. I mean, I know I hate that we're all in line with the same thing, but I think you bring up a good point, just the different eras and stuff. And I think probably people would have been mad if Jordan hadn't won it. But then at the same time, like people are like, I don't really think he should have won it. You know, it's kind of, like I said, there's so many different eras and stuff like that. I personally don't think Jordan was the best. I put him maybe on equal plane. I think there's a handful of guys out there, kind of like you're mentioning, who, you know, had they all played the game at the same time under the same era, I mean, it would have been unbelievable to see these guys on the court together through all these different eras. But yeah, I don't think he's the best in my opinion, even though I'm a hardcore Jordan guy and obviously a hardcore Carolina guy. But I think there's some Duke guys on there. Obviously, you mentioned Bird, and he's got to be up there. I could name at least a handful, maybe even a little bit more of guys that I would probably put on an equal playing field as the best of all time. I don't know if I could necessarily pick one. Now, when it comes to the NBA, screw you, LeBron. It's going to be Jordan all day, every day. But college, I feel like there's a little bit more playing field out there.
Yeah, so with that, I will say Jordan, hands down, is the best NBA player, professional player of all time. No question there. Jeez. I really want to know who answered this poll, because I don't see how anybody has not said Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lou Alcindor from UCLA. The man, just looking at stats, because numbers don't lie, he averaged like 25 and 15. He had three NCAA championships. He was Final Four most outstanding player. It's like a three-time All-American, Player of the Year twice. Like, nobody can match his stats in college, just the dominance that he had. I mean, even going up to NBA, he's still the league's leading scorer. So I'm going with Kareem on that one. Jordan's definitely a phenomenal player, but college-wise, I got to go with Kareem.
And I don't know if you guys saw the tweet from Kareem after it was announced that Jordan won, but I'll change it slightly since we're a family friendly show. But he said, "Laugh my butt off." So obviously he has his own opinions. I'm guessing maybe he feels like he should be number one, but certainly
got a little slighted there.
Has to be up there. You know, the Leitners of the world, Waltons. You know, I mean, there's just so many guys that pains me to mention a Duke guy on there, but there's a lot of guys on there that I think you could equally give
them deserving certainly
a crown for. Yeah, for sure.
All right. So last question of the night, in honor of what have been the Masters tournament coming this weekend, what is your dream golf course that you would either want to play at or go watch an event at? Either one of you first.
Matt, go for it.
Okay. So, you know, getting to see the Masters, obviously, in its environment, because it's such a changing course with shade cover to sun, you know, from morning to night, and seeing all that golf being played. Like, the course changes throughout the day, and that's where you really have to rely on your caddy for so many things. So, you know, that I would love, and it's on my to-do list for life, bucket list, if you will, to go see that at the actual event. If you're asking about where I would want to play, you know, I'm a big, terrible handicap. So like, I can do a straight drive for two or three, and all of a sudden I change one thing with my broken wrist, and it ends up physically actually broken, not because I twisted a little bit. But it'll end up wide left or right. So I've always wanted to play at St. Augustine. Is that right? Over St. in Europe?
Augustine in Florida. Oh, in Europe? And
No. What's the one in Europe?
Talking about St. Andrews?
St. Andrews. Sorry.
Scotland.
So, sorry. I had a Florida course in mind. I'll get to that in a second. But St. Andrews was always someplace I thought would be a lot of fun. You know, you play Tiger Woods or any golf game you want. It was just, how fast could you tap the button? Because you knew you could just drive it. And as long as the wind wasn't completely against you, you could just place it wherever you wanted. So that just seemed neat to me as somebody who needs a little bit wider fairway. But I think there's just some really, really good ones down in Florida. You know, and I think you could easily talk me into playing any of those, just because the weather, you can go year round, but you know, if you go in any of the cooler times of year, it certainly gives you, like, Palm Beach Gardens is just a beautiful, beautiful course. I think you could talk me into going to play there anytime, and I wouldn't mind how many go in the drink. David?
So
I tried teaching you golf before, and then you took a class, so you're definitely on.
Yeah, so Augusta, or the Masters, is definitely a bucket list event to go watch at some point. I was fortunate to play at Harbortown Links in Hilton Head a few years ago, which was a lot of fun. But I got to say, Pebble Beach out in California would probably be a wonderful view out on the ocean, waves crashing. I'd definitely lose more balls into the ocean than I'd probably actually drive down the fairway, but it would be totally worth it.
Matt, you pretty much stole my entire answer.
Jeez.
Because as soon as David read the question from our producer, Chris, literally the first course outside of the Masters, obviously, Augusta, literally the very first course I thought it was St. Andrews, and is because of going out and playing all those old school Tiger Woods games. I don't know what it was about that course, but it just like sticks perfectly in my memory. Like, I, even though it's been years since I played one of those games, I can still remember like so many like key points of that particular course. because I played it so many freaking times, you know, on Xbox or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's you know, it's considered the oldest golf course in the world. And obviously, Scotland's a pretty damn cool place. So I wouldn't mind going over there and seeing or certainly playing there. And yeah, one of these days, I mean, any place that Tiger Woods is playing, I wouldn't mind. I've only gotten to see him play live, I think, once or twice ever. So I wouldn't mind trying to hit that up, you know, one last time before he says his final hurrah.
Well, hopefully he'll show up in Greensboro in August and we can all go watch him in North Carolina if he's playing then. We'll see.
There you go.
So who knows? All right. Well, let's go ahead and wave the checkered flag. Final thoughts for tonight. What you got, John?
Man, it was just an awesome episode. It's really cool to we start mixing a lot of our passions. You know, you guys know I'm a big racer and or big into racing and obviously iRacing. So that was pretty cool to talk to Scott and kind of see the business side of things. Makes me regret some of my decisions in school. Maybe I went the wrong direction. Who knew that iRacing was going to be a thing you could make some money off of? I think
all
Dell,
of our parents said it was a terrible idea.
Yep. Exactly.
Every single one.
I think someone asked Dale Jr. the other day what he would say to his father about all this, and he said, "I told you so." So obviously, Dale Sr. thought it was hogwash as well, like most of our parents did, I'm sure. But yeah, so excited about that, and looking forward to, you know, as Scott mentioned, some additional iRacing coverage on TV. I saw that, I think it's on Fox Sports 1, I think the World of Outlaws virtual is going to be on iRacing this week, one night as well. So I'm hoping to tune in on that. But yeah, it's kind of cool to see, you know, these pro series around the world and just giving us a sense of a normalcy. And I'm glad that racing is filling a big void in a lot of people's lives right now.
Yeah. Honestly, with the topics we've covered now, I'm somewhere between, because I've been wanting to buy a rig. Now I'm like, kind of trying to figure out if I can get my father-in-law to go halvesies on, you know, decent rig. Just tell me he has to come over to my house to play. I've also
get you a Logitech system with a play seat, you know.
I just kind of looked at him and I was like, hey, the nice ones with all the you know, for a home system, just for the seat setup, the rig itself, not the computer, not the monitors, but just the rig with hydraulic feedback and tilting and all that. Probably about $8,000. He just looked at me. He's like, yeah, all right. Like, yeah. He was half agreed. And I'm going, this is a great thing. Come on with it.
Make it happen. I'll be driving over to Ohio.
Come play. Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay.
Like, so ring the doorbell. Can Chris come? Or can Matt? Can I come in and play with Matt? Can Matt come out and play?
Can Matt come out and play?
The, we'll probably be quiet. This
will be. The admittance will be beer and or other.
It'll be a full circle from 25 years ago.
Yep. So somewhere between that and then talking about St. Andrews, now I'm sitting here thinking, like, I think we should go make a trip out to, I think it's Scotland, right? Scotland. And, you know, have a few drinks and see how badly we play.
That would be entertaining. I would, yeah, I'm in. Once the social distancing is over, we can get on an airplane again. We need to make that happen.
Hey, look, you know how they got to 18 holes, right? They pulled out a fifth of whiskey or scotch or whiskey somewhere in there, and they took a shot per hole, and they ran out of whiskey. They call it 18 holes.
Yeah, there you go.
That was a horrible joke.
Oh gosh, he thinks I'm joking.
Totally do.
Look it up.
Oh man, for me, I actually have, I think, Tiger Woods 2001. So I think I want to get that out and play in the next few days after we talked about it tonight. So too bad it's not 98, but I think I'm gonna pop that out and see what I can do. Yeah, that gets some esports in. I think that might be the new thing to watch on TV for the foreseeable future, because I'm sick of reruns already from old games that have already gone on. So that should be the fun thing going forward. So, yeah, but thanks again to Scott. It was definitely fun.
What's funny is...
Yeah, go ahead.
I would say that what's funny is I started playing NASCAR games on computer, like, oh, geez. Like, is that back in, like, the early 2000, maybe like late 90s or something like that.
Late 90s.
I still remember, I'm trying to remember like who made, there was a company that started with a P and I cannot think of it off the top of my head now. I think it was it Papyrus? Yeah, I think it was. It made the first one. I think it was like 94 and it was like Windows 93.
Wow.
And I was playing on this desktop. It was my older brother's desktop computer that was like the size of my desk that I'm sitting at now. And I remember playing that game for like hours using just the keyboard on like the most basic graphics ever.
Yeah.
But, nostalgia. Yeah, I go old school, man. It was like, I think it was like, I don't even remember what it was called. It was just called like NASCAR or something because it was like before they started putting the years on there. But I think it was 94, if I remember correctly, when I first started getting into it. 94, 95, somewhere in. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I go way back.
Oh, man.
Does anybody remember going over to Chris's house and playing, I think it was 2000, where Daryl Waltrip had retired and he had the EA car? My favorite thing was to turn around and go backward because I would hit Chris head on while he was actually trying to be serious on the PlayStation. And my car was, if we did a long race like a Talladega, the car would literally, if I could hit him just right coming into like turn three or something, my car would literally flip end over end down the entire straightaway. Completely airborne, not even on the ground. It literally flew. None of the other cars would do it, just that one. It was great.
Yeah, the physics weren't exactly great back in those old days. iRacing has certainly improved that over the years.
That's why it was like the stupid fun, because I would laugh the entire time and Chris would get so upset because he's actually doing well.
Good times, good memories,
David. All right, well, it's been fun talking about the business side of sport a little bit tonight and just NASCAR in general. So signing off for season 2 episode 33, and we'll be back with you again next week, guys.
Boogity boogity boogity.
Later.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to have your sports-related question or comment featured on the show, please email us at sportstalkgarage@gmail.com. Also, if you want to keep up to date with us outside of the show, please follow us on Twitter at sportsgaragepod. If you enjoy the show, please drop us a 5-star review and subscribe if you want to hear more. So for Chris back in the studio, David and Matt, I'm John, and we are the Sports Talk Garage.